a good story.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's about a campus serial killer who murders 8 students. But nothing happens because the prestigious university covers it up.
Oh, I've heard this one. It supposedly happened at Pendleton. It's just an urban legend.
You didn't let me finish. After the murders, the chief of security, who refused to go along with the cover-up, is fired. Spends an entire year looking for work. Finally lands an entry-level position at another university.
Well, thanks for the ride.
Oh, yeah, baby, anytime.
Have a good night.
Urban legend my ass.
Listen, I'm sorry about that. No, who are we kidding? She's no Jamie Lee Curtis, right? But she'll get better.
Young man, that woman's acting would be wretched in a porno film.
The movie is about a serial killer whose murders are all based on urban legends.
That's pretty cool.
911, please state your emergency.
I just woke up in a dump of ice.
Don't tell me. Your kidney's gone.
Yes.
Listen, honey, I got Princess Di I'm riding for. I gotta go.
She puts her hand down, and if her dog licks her hand, she knows everything's okay.
Can I be the dog? Because I'm a great licker.
Yeah, that's what Dirk told me.
Mayfield, you stole my fucking genre.
Watch out!
Oh, my God! Jesus!
Oh, my God.
Gotcha.
She's one hell of an actress, ain't she?
Oh, come on. They slashed a major artery, and that's all the blood? OJ left more blood than that on the Bronco.
Well, I was recording screaming.
Now, let me get this. You were recording screaming, and then you heard screaming. Baby, I think your movie's making you paranoid.
I guess by now most of you have heard the news. For those of you who haven't, Travis Stark took his life last night.
Amy, this is our chance to draw out the killer and discover who it is.
Toby's film is falling apart from the very beginning. He knew mine was good because he did the sound on it. Isn't that right, Toby?
No, I did not do the sound on your film, you fake suicide psycho.
You realize what this means, don't you? It means I gave you an A in sound for nothing.
Got what you wanted.
You think this is what I wanted?
Fuck DJ!
I think we have a lot in common.
Hi, this is Larry Zerner from Friday the 13th Part 3, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues. This is episode 194. And this time we're heading back not to Pendleton University, but to a university not a million miles away for Urban Legends Final Cut. Yes, the wacky sequel to 1998 hit Urban Legends. This is your choice, Joseph, isn't it? Are you looking forward to covering this one?
Yes, I'm looking forward to attending this rather prestigious looking film university that I'm not certain anything like this exists. Can someone prove me wrong?
What, you mean a place that has $1 million budget for student movies?
Yeah, really?
Well, who knows? I mean, it's possibly a little bit far-fetched, but okay. Yes, well, we'll be coming on to that shortly. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you very much.
Ah, you're sounding a bit like Smashy and Nicey, aren't you?
I like your radio voice there, Eric.
It's like Casey
Kasem. You could be on the radio every day, just like Casey Kasem, introducing very rapid-fire hits for the RTE.
No. I said you have to play the hits. Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and good work on the intro, Joseph.
Yes.
That was cool.
Yeah, wasn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Wasn't that amazing? It's my best intro ever.
It is, yeah. Best ever.
Well, thanks a lot. Now I'm going to have to make the best intro ever.
Yes. Oh, I set you up for it.
Yeah, in case you're wondering, we're recording San intro. It hasn't been recorded yet, so.
San intro?
Sans.
Oh, Sans. Okay,
Sans, sorry.
Sorry.
God.
What was the word you made up?
I have a hearing issue, okay? And I actually went to the doctor about it.
Pardon?
So how dare you?
Yeah, I bet you feel bad now, Joseph.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad about anything.
You know what? I'm going to put you in an elaborate Saw-style trap, and then you'll feel bad.
Yeah. Thanks, Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
What word did you make up in the Patreon episode we just recorded?
Tenuosity.
Tenuosity.
Yes. because you guys said that Bad Moon Rising was tenuous for it, and I'm like, no, it fits. Somehow in my brain, it fits.
It's the Deadly Spawn.
The Deadly Spawn is what we just recorded for Patreon, so if you are a Patreon supporter, then you get to hear that us talk waxing lyrical about the Deadly Spawn.
And you'll love it, because it's deadly and Spawnish.
And Spawnish.
Justin is in a country now that's Spawnish.
I am quite in a country that's quite Spanish. But and Nathan finds out what prawns are.
Yes.
Yes. I learned something in that episode.
Educational as well.
Exactly.
Because I always thought it was those things on the end of forks, but then you guys proved me wrong.
Yes, we had a prawn. Not thankfully porn discussion. So if you want to throw down as little as a dollar, you can hear us talking about prawns.
And so, you might want to donate or do Patreon, because Eric's joke actually made Joseph laugh genuinely.
And me.
Yes.
Hey, and Justin. Eric's jokes,
thank you. Eric's jokes, they don't always make me laugh, but they make me laugh more often than not. They just never make Justin laugh.
Thank you.
Well, I did laugh internally this time, which is more than usual. But we've got to see what your joke of the week is going to be like for Urban Legends Final Cut, Eric.
Some, as always, handcrafted with care.
With care.
Justin's kind of one of those crying on the inside clowns, I guess.
Every time I do this podcast, I don't know why it is. But so, okay. Well, we will be coming on to Urban Legends Final Cut a little bit in a short while from feature presentation. But before we do that, let's have a chat about what we've been watching recently. So, who would like to go first? Joseph, how about you?
Well, I watched the Banana Splits movie, and I'm pretty certain all of us have. Maybe not Eric. I have. Okay. The premise for this movie is really excellent, and there are some great scenes in this film. However, I didn't quite enjoy it as much as I want to, and I think the problem is the tone. I mean, the actors, they just kind of run around like, oh no, there's a killer robot after us. What are we going to do? And it just kind of kills any suspense, because you don't really care about these people. You can't really get invested with them. And more to the point, I think the actors playing the quote-unquote robotic Banana Splits characters, they're not quite robotic enough. You can just tell they're humans in like flimsy costumes. And I know that's kind of pedantic, but, you know, I kind of wanted that sort of crush, kill, destroy, that kind of robotic movement sort of to it. And it just felt kind of lackluster. There's a scene where I'm trying not to spoil too much, but there's a scene where a girl is wading through this kind of this children's ball pit, you know, those plastic balls they have at the like playgrounds, and she's hiding from one of the killers, and she's kind of crawling through the ball pit, and there's a dead body in there, and it's a really well shot scene. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I want the whole movie to be this kind of playful, and it's just not. It's just it's almost you know, like I said, it's almost like these people are embarrassed to be in this movie, and the movie itself is sort of like maybe, you know, hostile with cartoon characters. It just doesn't feel as fun as I wanted it to be. Not a terrible movie, you know, well made enough, but I don't know. It was a huge disappointment for me, I'm afraid.
Okay, right. So we've all seen it. I imagine, Nathan, what did you think? I imagine you may have liked it more.
Yes, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was real gory and fun slasher shenanigans. I like the idea of this like group of people that get to stay behind after a taping of the show, get kind of trapped in the building and picked off by these like demented robots. I will admit, like Joseph said, there were times I would forget they were robots. But I mean, it didn't really bother me necessarily, just because I thought the whole movie was goofy. I particularly loved when the macho kind of dad kind of character gets chased by one of them, and he's like doing this like breathing like like it's just funny, like his fear it turns him into a totally different kind of character. But the scene that Joe mentioned with the the one girl that was in that like ball pit, like kind of sorting through them. It was great, especially the POV shot, because you're like, okay, what is she about to come across? And she's like, keep going through there. So that was awesome. I loved the them making like two characters do this sort of like a what do you call it? It's like a course, like
obstacle course.
Obstacle course. Yes, thank you. I loved when they made them do the obstacle course, and then it's like they think if they make it through that they're going to let them live, and I'm like, they're going to let you live no matter what. But they end up doing the obstacle course anyway. So to me, just stuff like that is just so goofy. I enjoyed it. I thought it was just cheesy.
What about you, Eric?
Yeah, I saw it too. I kind of liked it. I'm sort of halfway between Joseph and Nathan on this one, I'd say. I had fun watching this sort of assortment of characters going to watch the taping of the Banana Splits, which was quite funny and nostalgic. It probably loses something a little in the second half, because it becomes quite clear early on that none of the, quote, sort of nice characters are ever going to be in any kind of danger. It's only sort of the loud, brash, evil ones that are going to get, you know, get it as such. It's not a major problem, but it made the film quite predictable, and it kind of felt sort of by the numbers then. And I didn't realize going into the film that the Banana Splits were meant to be robots either. So that was that came as a surprise to me. I didn't pick that up from the trailer, but maybe I just wasn't paying attention. But yeah, so I was kind of expecting it maybe once I learned they were robots for it to become like Chopping Mall. But as the lads have said, you know, you kind of forget that they're robots, because they just feel like actors walking around in you know, children's TV presenter costumes. So it kind of loses maybe that edge. But the mayhem is pretty decent once it starts, especially the banana split punishment that one character gets. I thought the nice characters were fairly likable. Like the kid is you know, likable enough, and his friend that goes with him to meet the banana splits, and the older brother is nice. And then the stakes were never that high. But it had enough enjoyable moments for me to, like, when the film was over, I didn't feel like, oh, that was a waste of time. I felt that was, you know, a pleasant diversion. I don't think it's one I'd go back to see again ever, but I did enjoy it while it was on. So, yeah, it was a 6, maybe 7 out of 10 for me for that one.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you. I mean, did any of you guys actually see the Banana Splits when it was on TV? I mean, obviously not when it was first released. Was it still in rotation?
It was for me.
I've seen like YouTube clips, and I think I may have seen like an instance of it or two, you know, a long time ago, but I never actually watched it.
Because I remember watching it as a kid, but I think it was only produced from like 1969 to 1972 or something like that, wasn't it? There wasn't a load of shows made. So, but when they announced it, I did sort of think, oh, they're going to ruin my childhood. And then I sort of warmed up to the idea, and then they watched it and realised they did ruin my childhood. I didn't like it. I thought it was a missed opportunity all round, really. It tonally, it's all over the place. It doesn't know whether it wants to be a kids movie, a gore movie, a scary movie, a sci-fi movie, a monster movie, or what it wants to be. But outside of the kind of the recreation, which is fantastic, of the Banana Splits kind of lair and all the kind of the costume design is fantastic, but it didn't really have anything else to do with the Banana Splits. Really, it felt it could have been anything. It didn't need to be the Banana Splits. It could have been any kind of TV character. And funny enough, that we who was it who remembered from our Terror Red Dwarf Inn episode, Joseph, on the boards?
That... I want to say it was Tristan Comer, or how can that be? I'll have to look and see. But yeah, they posted that on the forums, and I was like, wow, that's either, you know, a coincidence, or you're prescient, or someone was listening.
Well, that was, yeah. I mean, that was funny, wasn't it? Because we'd recorded the episode back in 2012, I think, of the I think I'm just going to dig out the sound clip now, actually, and see if I can find it to play on here to give you an idea, and you can listen and see where you think we should sue or not.
No, I haven't seen Terror on Tour, I'm afraid. I'm ashamed to say.
That's okay. Well, mind you, be thankful for small mercies is all I can
say. But no, I do love, I don't love big hair metal, but I like looking at big hair metal bands and laughing at them, so...
Well, this is kind of more kind of Kiss inspired, isn't it? It's
yeah.
I guess that.
Yeah.
And I kind of guess part of the reason why it's kind of a whodunit in some ways is, I suppose, it would only work if the band were wearing makeup or with the banana splits or something, and were in costumes with masks, then that would be the only way it would work. I'd like to see
Slipknot.
Sorry?
Slipknot.
Slipknot would work, but can you imagine that they did the banana splits? That'd be a great kind of retro slasher movie, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be interesting.
It would, yes. Mm. Okay.
So, yeah, so that was a clip from 2012, so should we sue? Probably not. But, yeah, just goes
to show. Just to get our time back, maybe.
Yeah, just get our time back. I mean,
not
I thought
me
it was...
and Eric.
Yeah. Well, I kind of enjoyed it. I just thought it was... It was just a missed opportunity. I think they just didn't really know which tone to go for, and it should have gone full throttle one way or the other. Also, did you notice... Did you notice with the when the banana splits, when they were jumping around on stage, there were definitely people in the costumes, but then yes. They did this whole kind of weird robotic walk everywhere. So it was just a bit silly. And no real reason for them to go psychotic, was there?
They were being cancelled, the show.
So yeah, but they started going wrong before that, didn't they, before they realised?
Did they?
Mm.
All right.
Yeah.
What's weird is, they were being cancelled, and, they'd been cancelled years ago. So I guess in this universe, it's still ongoing, perhaps, maybe. I don't know. It's like Justin said, it could have been any, childhood cartoon character, Foghorn Leghorn or somebody like that. It didn't really matter.
No. You can imagine in an early 80s TV studio being stalked by Robot Toya. That'd be terrifying.
Hey, now... In 7 years, someone will probably make that movie. So
that's true. Hang on to this clip.
Yeah,
well, good. I want to see a Robot Toya movie. That'd be awesome.
Where is that clip you keep on that GIF you keep on posting with her, where she's shooting laser bolts out of her breasts?
Yeah, that's the video for Rebel Run, her classic 1983 hit single.
Well, I did notice that listening back to that 2012 episode, we were talking about Susie versus Toya there. So God knows, nothing's changed. I mean, we're coming up for 10 years.
Yeah.
And the audio quality is just about the same, unfortunately.
We've always had a problem being a transatlantic podcast because I'm in Spain, well, off the coast of Africa. Eric's in Ireland, and Joseph and Nathan are in Tennessee in the United States, which I'm sure you've listened to the podcast regularly.
Not anymore. I'm not in Tennessee anymore. No, oh. I'm in Georgia.
He's in Georgia.
Ah, so even trans state.
I'm literally like walking distance to Tennessee, though. So,
okay. And in all honesty, Joseph actually lives closer to me now than he did before.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it just kind of, because we got the time differences, especially with, I'm on the same time zone as Eric, but we have problems with recording. It's not like recording in a room. So sometimes things go wrong. Sometimes things go horribly wrong. So we have been trying different ways to record. We're back on Skype at the moment, which you may have noticed, but it's behaving itself. So.
And I'm even implementing some new editing tricks. So maybe one day we'll actually sound semi-professional.
Oh, one day, maybe we can dream. We can dream.
That'd be cute.
That would be totally
fantastic.
Well, that just ruined it.
That's from opera.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Argento's last great film.
Yeah. So, what were we talking about?
We were talking about recently seen, and we were finishing up the banana splits conversation.
Okay.
I wanted to say that even though I did really enjoy the movie, I do agree with Eric in that there are certain characters where I never, ever felt that they were in any danger. I was like, oh, you're safe. Don't worry. They ain't going to get you. And I'm like, usually I kind of like the stakes to be high where you don't know what's going to happen.
The dad character, it kind of ties in with what Justin is saying, is that the tone is all over the place. I mean, his only function in the movie is to be a complete jerk and then to die basically twice almost. I mean, his character is just pointless. I mean, I don't care to see some guy be a jerk. You know, you save that screen time for someone I actually like. It leads to this kind of jokey scene of him being chased by these, characters in this kind of like this clown car. And I didn't laugh. I think I was supposed to. I just didn't. I don't know.
I feel like it's kind of what all y'all were saying earlier, is that in this movie, there's no real in-between. You're either a really, really good guy and safe, or you're a despicable human being and you're not safe. And that's kind of the formula in this film, which I do think is kind of a flaw, even though I did enjoy it. So
And did you notice when the dad character was being chased by, is it Snooky in the elephant banana split in the banana split beach buggy, and he was running, being chased for what seemed like 5 minutes down this thing, and all he had to do was jump up on the side to get away?
And then they bring him back at the very end just so he can get killed again in the same manner. It's like, we saw this already. What's the point?
Well, I think the point was he had a final scene with his wife, and I think that was more for her than for him.
Yeah, big whoop.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, let us know what you think about the Banana Splits movie. What else have we been watching? So, Joseph, we started with you. Did there's anything else?
Well, I have a couple of things, but we're recording kind of, you know, back to back, so I want to save a little bit for the next episode.
Cool. Okay. Well, Nathan, anything else?
I just wanted to bring up that Joe and I have been watching Saw movies on our movie nights. And I have to say, I really can't believe I ever took these movies seriously. Like, they are so unbelievably stupid when you, like, just think about them. I mean, you think about this character that has to kidnap, like, 14 people in the span of 24 hours and then set up all these traps. I mean, it's just so unbelievably dumb, but I found myself loving these movies more than I did when I took them seriously. Like, I'm loving them more now because I see how dumb it is, and I find that immensely entertaining. And to me, it's also very entertaining that all the actors and everybody associated with the movie takes it so seriously, but it's just not to me.
I've done a complete 180 on the Saw series. Like Nathan, this is like the perfect party series because you can go, you know, have a few drinks or get high or whatever. And the movie, you know, like Nathan said, the movies are so ridiculous. Like the Hoffman character in the later sequel, he's a detective. He just got a promotion. He's trying to stave off an investigation. He's having to kidnap like 16 people, set up like 10 traps. He's trying to cover his own tracks. I mean, this guy has like no time to sleep, and yet he does all this stuff in the span of like a day. It's so ridiculous, and we laughed and laughed. And it's so po-faced that you just can't help but, like, you know, cover your mouth and point and giggle at, like, you know, just how could anyone take this crap seriously? It's just, yeah, these are just fun party movies. I've really come around to them.
Well, he also has to predict exactly what people are going to think.
Yeah.
And he's always right.
Yes.
And Jigsaw is such a hypocrite, and he's such a I mean, I do not agree with anything he does. I mean, he kidnaps this guy in the third movie, and his punishment is to basically walk through this gauntlet of hideous traps and watch as people die. And the reason why he's doing this, oh, he grieved over the loss of his dead son. What the fuck, Jigsaw? You're a jerk. Jerksaw is your name.
Yeah, he's a total jerk.
And then, like, he punishes the cop.
I love Tobin Bell, don't get me wrong, but Jigsaw's such a jerk.
Well, he punishes a cop for doing his job too well.
Yeah, and then the insurance people in the sixth movie, he kidnaps them, puts them through these hideous torture scenarios. Why? Oh, they were doing their jobs. They were insurance salesman assistants. What?
Well, what about in Saw 7, like, a woman gets, like, burned alive in like one of those like it looks like a kind of like a bronze bowl kind of contraption. She gets burned alive in it because her husband lied and she didn't know. Like, she deserved to die for that, apparently.
Yeah.
Harsh.
I've never made it past part two, so maybe I should give it another go.
Justin, they're just so dumb.
Justin, have a couple of dry martinis and just go to town with these films. They're hilarious.
Okay.
They sound like they're probably better to rewatch in company rather than on your own. I've only ever seen
I thought that they were just grim and I liked them, but I was like, I can't rewatch them. They're just too kind of like you know, serious and stuff. But I don't know, watching them with Joe and just picking them apart and realizing how utterly ridiculous all of this is, it just all clicked for me.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. So where are we, Nathan, that was
my recently seen.
Okay, well, thank you. Eric, anything to report?
No, just a Banana Splits movie, and I have another one that we are carrying over to the next episode as well. So,
okay, right. Well, thank you. I caught up with a film called Tone Deaf, which I hadn't heard of before. Which is a kind of a horror comedy with kind of slasher overtones, I kind of guess. And the premise, which I think is quite a sort of clever one, really, is that you have a baby boomer played by Robert Patrick, probably best known as in Terminator 2, as this kind of baby boomer who gets dementia and then decides that he wants to kill millennials. And so he rents out this massive, great house, and he puts out an ad, and it gets this woman named Olive, Amanda Crew, the actress name, I think. She rents it after breaking up with her boyfriend and goes to for a bit of kind of downs or me time. And it's just kind of quite witty and quite clever. It's not an amazing movie by any stretch, but I thought it was interesting, sort of very timely, having that kind of baby boomer versus millennial kind of showdown. And it's got some very funny moments in it. And my favourite is the fact is that it's this kind of commentary on sort of modern life and the rightly or wrongly about sort of millennials and sort of saying about how, you know, you can't everybody finds everything offensive and everyone's kind of wrapped in cotton wool. And the kind of main joke and the title of the movie essentially is called Tone Deaf. And the Olive, all the way through her childhood, thinks that she's an amazing pianist. And so she plays, every time she plays music for anyone, everyone just thinks that was amazing, even though she's completely tone deaf. And so it's not until the killer makes her play piano and then says, oh, you're shit, which is quite funny. And the funniest scene in it was when she, the killer goes after her with a tomahawk, and rather than screaming and running away, she berates him for cultural appropriation. So that's the kind of tone of the movie. But you know, if you like your kind of horror films with a sort of twist of comedy and a bit of social commentary as well, then it might be worth checking out. Have you guys heard of it?
No, you were just mentioning that yesterday through Messenger, and I really like Robert Patrick, and it sounds really fun. I got it on my queue if I can ever get time to watch some, you know, more movies.
Cool. Yeah, I had a look on IMDb, and it's from the same director as Excision, which was out a few years ago, which I really didn't like at all.
Okay.
But I'm willing to give this one a go, and I see it's only like 85 minutes as well, which appeals to me.
Yeah. No, I thought it was quite good fun. And it also got a couple of, it's got a cameo of Ray Wise, plays her father, and also Kim Delaney, who I didn't recognise until the very end, who was in NYPD Blue and lots of things. And also was in Hunter's Blood, kind of like semi-slasher movie from the mid-80s, plays her mother in it. So yeah, worth a look. So I kind of guess we should get to the main feature. So I'm going to play the trailer for Urban Legends Final Cut, and then Joseph, you're going to bring us back in.
Devil Times 5 is the fast-paced podcast in which three comedians and two horror experts dissect a different theme, franchise or subgenre each month before playing around with horror's hardest quiz. Scary noises. So, for hot takes and piss takes, listen to Devil Times 5, the British horror podcast that knows how to have fun.
I got a good story. Yeah, it's about a campus serial killer who murders 8 students.
Urban Legends.
They had this, like, creature on the wing of the plane.
We've all told them.
True story, right?
We've all heard them.
You're going down.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Cut!
This is no Jamie Lee Curtis, right?
But these students are daring.
Urban Legends, scene 6, take 2.
To film them.
The movie is about a serial killer whose murders are all based on urban legends.
That's pretty cool.
There's this girl.
She puts her hand down, and if her dog licks her hand, she knows everything's okay.
Can I be the dog? Because I'm a great licker.
It's an urban legend.
Like that girl who eats a burrito with a pregnant roach and all the eggs hatch inside of her nose?
No.
It's a tradition during finals week. At the stroke of midnight, everyone screams.
Someone is turning legends.
And at the same time, a co-ed is brutally attacked.
Into reality.
Dude, that looks so real.
Not enough blood.
You don't think it was real?
OJ left more blood than that on the Bronco.
Paranoia. Wrong man accused. How the lines blur between fantasy and reality.
She's... Gotcha.
She's one hell of an actress, ain't she?
Whoever's doing this is gonna come after you again. Trust me.
Just an urban legend.
Urban legend, my ass.
Urban Legends, Final Cut.
You ever hear the urban legend about the guy who picks up the dead hitchhiker?
The making of a horror movie takes on a terrifying reality for students at the most prestigious film school in the country in Urban Legends, Final Cut, the suspenseful follow-up to the smash hit Urban Legend. At Alpine University, someone is determined to win the best film award at any cost, even if it means eliminating the competition. No one is safe and everyone is a suspect. Urban Legends Final Cut is an edge-of-your-seat thriller that will keep you guessing until the shocking climax. Urban Legends Final Cut may be the worst slasher film ever made, or one of the best that is kind of slightly confused about its own identity. It really does not know if it's Arthur or Martha. I don't know. If you go into this one expecting kind of a retread or even a continuation of the first film, you will be disappointed. It's, when we were talking about the Banana Splits film, we were talking about tone. And like that movie, the tone is kind of all over the place in this film as well. It wants to be Alfred Hitchcock, but it also, can't help but being a dumb slasher movie. And I think it works here where it did not work in the Banana Splits movie, because I think I like the characters a little more here, even though they're kind of bland and vanilla. They're still somewhat memorable. They're kind of like... It's like, hey, I know that guy. I don't really know who he is, but I've seen him so many times that he's almost like a friend to me, sort of. But, like I said, they kind of throw in the kitchen sink, the stove, the refrigerator, probably even a few items from the pantry, too. I mean, the film is just so dumb. I mean, the killer's identity, it's both awesome and absurd. We often get into spoilers, so let's do that now. The killer turns out to be Hart Bochner's character, Professor Solomon. And his motive is that he hates teaching these douchey film students, and he kind of wants to escape to Hollywood. That's been his dream, and he's been trapped in a teaching position all this time. But, his idea is to kill everyone involved with a student film and pass it off as his own so he can get, a foothold into Hollywood. We continuously hear just how wonderful this movie is, though we never see a single piece of footage from it. So it's more of a MacGuffin than anything else. Hilariously, this movie is supposedly so good that it's pretty much a guarantee that it's kind of like, it's worthy of this stipend and this Hollywood movie deal. And yet only about three people seem to have worked on it. I mean, I don't buy that. And more to the point, it just seems like, how does Hart Bochner's character expect to get away with this boneheaded plan of his? I mean, I know he's trying to kill everybody involved with it, but I just don't buy that, there was just a handful of people, involved with this movie that's supposedly so good that it'll get you into Hollywood. Also, this film school, like I said at the beginning of the show, this film school is something else. They have these huge... sets. They have scoring booths. They have these movie theaters. And what's funny is there only seems to be about 10 people who attend this school. I mean, I guess no one could really afford it. I mean, I also liked the Toby character and the Graham characters played by Anson Mount and Joseph Lawrence, respectively. They have like no reason to be in this movie whatsoever, other than to kind of corner the heroine and just kind of look suspicious and kind of, say, oh, you're going to get what's coming to you. And then they just kind of disappear until the end of the movie. Like I said, these characters, they're kind of bland and they kind of look like one another. And they don't really seem to have any kind of camaraderie like the characters in the first film did. They just kind of simply hang around with one another just because they're working on a movie. It's kind of weird. like I said, they're all still likable enough to spend 90 minutes, film-wise. Urban Legends for me, Urban Legends Final Cut, it may or may not be better than the first film. I don't really know, but I do love it. I think the problem, though, with the film for a lot of people is that they expected more of the same, and I guess it sort of is, but it's also just kind of different and bizarre enough to be its own animal. So I guess maybe, you know, maybe it was a little too different. I don't know, but... finally, the urban legends shtick here, it seems to be kind of downplayed, you know, which is kind of strange for a film called Urban Legends. It's the type, you know, it's the type of movie that thinks it's, you know, being smart and clever half the time. But half of these urban legends, I don't really even remember being urban legends. Maybe it's just I didn't read about them. I don't know. But
not the urban legend about the guy being beaten over the head with a camera lens. No,
no, no. I'm sure it exists. But, you know, I just didn't remember it. But if we boil this down, this is really just your, you know, dumb average slasher film from 2000 that's trying to ape, you know, the Scream films, but just doesn't quite have the, you know, the mental tenacity to do so. Although for me, this movie and the first Urban Legends are infinitely more watchable than the Scream series. So, you know, it's clever when it needs to be, it's dumb when it needs to be, but ultimately it's just a lot of fun. It's silly, absurd, so don't go into it thinking it's anything more than that, because it's not. It's just a dumb slasher movie, and I love it. So what do you think, Justin?
Well, I hadn't seen it for a while. I remember I bought the DVD, so I haven't got the Blu-ray. I was tempted by the Scream Factory Blu-ray, but I've got the 2001 release, I think, of it on DVD. And I remember liking it. I've seen Urban Legend, the original, a lot more. And whether or not it's a better film, I don't think it is a better film. I think Urban Legend is a better, more even film. Because Urban Legend's Final Cut, it seems to be a bit... Because I've seen things about the director, John Ottman, said that he wanted the film to be... and we'll talk a bit more about this in the background, to be like a classic Hitchcockian suspense thriller, but it comes across as a very, very cheesy, over the top and unbelievable film, which in itself, of course, is not a bad thing. I mean, talking about slasher movies, and so, you know, the more over the top the better. And some things I took away from this was clearly that, you know, as I mentioned before, that it's ridiculous off the bat. You have this student film with this huge airplane set with this killer on an airplane, which it starts off with the kind of the misdirection of the first 5 minutes is of people being killed on a jumbo jet by a psycho trolley dolly, I kind of guess. And the final girl has to try and land the plane, and it kind of pulls back to show that this was actually it was a film within a film, and it's being shot by somebody on there, and it's a student set, which I went to film school. I did some stuff in film school, and literally you had a camcorder and a couple of people, if they wanted to be actors for you, you know, I don't think there's any film school in the world that would have a soundstage the size of that and a jumbo jet thing. So it starts off being gloriously, ridiculously over the top. In a scene that could not be recreated, would never be shot after, you know, 9/11, because obviously what happened with the aeroplanes and people being killed on the aircraft during that attack. So very much of its time. I mean, it kind of looks great. It's got a good budget. It's beautifully shot. You know, it looks great. I think the tone itself is a bit uneven, a bit like we said about Banana Splits. It veers from farce and almost like it kind of feels like it's tipping into parody, and sort of laughing at itself, but then it pulls back into kind of a more serious tone. And you have kind of some very broad characters. You have like Jessica Caulfield as Sandra, who went on to, I think she made a name in the Legally Blonde movies. And she's quite entertaining.
She's also in Valentine.
She was in Valentine, that's right, yeah. But she's good fun in this, but her character is so broad and over the top. It's like watching you know, a comedy movie. That scene when the sort of gloomy, glaring sort of foreign film student who kind of just, well, not even what he is, a cinematographer who's brought in to, you know, he's one of the best in the world, he's brought in to be on Jennifer Morrison's film. Again, it's kind of patently ridiculous, but
I was going to mention, he comes in with his camera. It's like $100,000 camera. I mean, how does this film student afford this?
I know. To sort of be to sit, call in, he's one of the world's leading cinematographers to come in and on this student film, which has got $100 million budget. So it is just kind of completely ridiculous. But I do love it's like a roller coaster ride, and it kind of tips its hat to that with the scene towards the end where again they're filming this. One of the student films in these kind of abandoned amusement park, and it has all these kind of tunnels with little carts right out of like My Bloody Valentine. Has a real vibe to that. It seems like a tip of the hat to that, and also a tip of the hat to sort of other kind of slasher films, because obviously the killer wears the fencing outfit that you see in Graduation Day. Now, I did interview the director, John Ottman, way back, probably, 20 years ago now, around, I think before the film had even come out. And I think it's fair to say he didn't really know his kind of horror movies as far as the kind of the references, and whether or not those references were in the script, I don't know, because he didn't know that Hart Bochner was in Terror Train, which I would have thought would have been a given that he would have mentioned that, but he didn't. So he went all the way through the movie without knowing, and Hart Bochner didn't tell him that he was one of the main characters in Terror Train, which I thought was quite strange. But yeah, it's a fun movie. I enjoy it. It's a party movie. It's not. I'm trying to think whether or not, you know, when it comes to those kind of the sequels as this kind of slasher revival after Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer, it kind of feels like it's starting to run out of steam a little bit. But it's a kind of a joyous romp. And if you don't take it too seriously, you can have a lot of fun with it.
A couple other things I wanted to mention before I move on to the next person I forgot to mention. The killer's costume, the fencing mask, I mean, I like it, but am I alone? And I feel like you don't really get like that kind of dread from it. Like you don't really even get to see the killer in his full glory. It's almost like the way it's edited, he kind of like darts into screen, or he's just kind of in the mist in the background sort of. And he has that one scene where he's chasing Jennifer Morrison through the studio. And this is another ridiculous scene because the studio has this grand piano and all these like orchestral instruments everywhere. And, that's beside the point. But anyway, he puts his fingers on the piano to kind of do this dun, dun, kind of to scare her out of her hiding spot. And it's a really good scene, but you don't really get a good look at him again. And there's one part where he's wearing like this kind of this Mac the Knife looking mask. It's really weird. You don't really get a good you don't really get any fear off the killer. It's kind of hard to explain. Am I alone in that?
No,
like in the first film, you really get to see the Parker killer a lot. And you that blank, that black face hidden behind the wall and carrying the axe and chasing, say, like a Sasha around. And here, the killer is almost kind of like a phantom. You don't really see as much, and you don't really get any fear off of him.
I would agree completely. I even when you do see the killer, I don't find the fencing mask to be that threatening.
I think the killer honestly looks like a giant microphone.
Because it's a film school, and
yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the fencing mask was also used in Graduation Day.
Yeah.
Did y'all find it scary there?
I didn't say it's scary, but it was done a little better because you get to see more of the killer kind of, you know, do his thing there. Another thing I was going to mention, like I said in my write-up, was that the Toby and the Graham characters, how they're kind of useless. Why didn't they kill them off? I mean, there's so many survivors in this film. It's weird because, like, there's like 6 or 7 deaths, which is a decent sized body count, but it could have been higher. And these characters are so, you know, useless. I mean, why not just kill them? Why let them live?
Because they have families and loved ones.
Yeah. And I also love I love how the Joseph Lawrence character, Graham, I mean, his only function in this film, he doesn't seem to be doing any work. He doesn't seem to be doing any schoolwork. He's just walking around on his cell phone like, well, my dad could get this film made tomorrow. Then why are you in film school? If your dad has all these connections, just go off and make movies. Anyway, Eric.
And it's over. Okay. Yeah. I saw this when it came out initially on DVD. It arrived in cinemas. I think it only lasted about a week over here. So I actually had to catch up with it on DVD when it was released in about, I suppose, 2001, maybe 2000. And I hadn't seen it since till I purchased I got the Scream Factory Blu-ray, which was released maybe earlier this year or last year, was it? So I hadn't seen it in a long time. And my memory of this was that it took itself much more seriously than the original. And the standout scene that I always thought of when I thought of Urban Legends Final Cut was that scene where the girl wakes up in the bathtub of ice and her kidney is missing. And I thought, oh, it's like a torture porn style sequel to Urban Legends. I'd completely forgotten about the rest of the film. And so I had this vision of it being kind of a nastier, grittier movie. But then rewatching it, I was like, oh no, it's completely silly. But it does, like, that scene is kind of shoehorned into the top to kind of justify the Urban Legends title, it seems. Because as you were saying, the rest of the movie doesn't really have murders that are based on any urban legends that I know of, unless, of course, as we were saying, there is an urban legend about a foreign cinematographer who has lots of money getting beaten over the head with a camera lens. But yeah, the bathtub scene is very graphic, and it's wince-inducing, I think, when she's sort of, you know, she's caught in the window and he's grabbing at the wound, you know, that's still raw, and it's just feels incredibly painful. And as I said, it's kind of predating the torture porn movement, which was still to arrive maybe 4 or 5 years later. So that scene always stuck with me. But my memory of watching Urban Legends back in 2000 or 2001 was that I didn't like it that much, but I have done more or less a complete 180 on it, because I absolutely love it now. I don't think it's as fun as the original. The original has this goofy charm that I just love, that it kind of shares the same DNA as I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, and I love those two movies. But this one is pretty close. I mean, I still really love it. I like the sort of giallo nature of the mystery, the secrets from the past is an identical twin subplot that's completely ludicrous. There's the super glamorous lesbian, and all that's missing kind of is, you know, a bottle of J&B, although that might be in there. I didn't spot any. I think the characters are, for the most part, pretty likable. Justin was saying the character of Sandra was pretty broad. I found her kind of funny, you know, her lack of self-awareness about her acting limitations. I thought just when she was on screen, it was just great fun. And I just thought it was kind of a shame she's killed off so early in the plot. The lead character, Amy, she is a nice balance, I thought, between being this sort of playful, carefree character and also being a bit more serious, because she's haunted by the past and she's the first to suspect that something's amiss on campus. And one of my criticisms for something like last year's Halloween 2018 was that Laurie was such a joy vacuum. I mean, she never smiled and her character was so downbeat and dour. So I like the fact that it has a lead character who can smile and can have a joke with her friends. And even at the end, I love her line at the end where she says that when the killer was filming Sandra's death, that was out of focus, and he really takes offense to that, which I thought was a great little line to have.
I love Hart Bogner in the role here. He's just so good.
He is. He's great. Again, I can't remember who I thought the killer was back in 2000. If I was able to guess, looking back at it now, it seems kind of obvious. Is it? Did you guess it, Joseph? I'm sure you did. You're good at this type of
stuff. Yes, because there's a law in these films when you have like relative unknowns in the cast, but you have this sort of big name, and his character really has no other purpose in the film other than to be revealed as the killer. So it's pretty obvious he's going to be the killer.
You see, this is why you're good at this type of stuff and why I'm not, because I would never even think along those logical lines. Loretta Devine, I love her. And she may be a Marmite character, I'm not sure, and people might hate her, but I think she's brilliant. I love her. I think she's really funny with her Pam Grier obsession, and she kind of offers this sort of lovely popcorn humor. Then you have the comic book effect, effects guys, who are these two jokesters who do the effects on these movies. Again, they seem to have a lot of money at their disposal, or else they're just really, really talented and can work under, you know, very severe restrictions financially and produce these wonderful results. But I'm getting the impression that if they can have a jumbo jet set in this school, they also have millions of pounds to spend on special effects as well. Vanessa is an interesting character also. You see her at the start and you assume she's sort of the hot chick. This is Eva Mendez's character. And you assume she's going to be the one the guys all want and she's going to have a hot boyfriend. And then it turns out she's a lesbian. Unfortunately, she's not really given much to do after that, apart from possibly being a bit of a red herring later in the film. But I thought she was, again, an interesting character in it. Like you were saying, Joseph, I find the people who are left standing, a lot of them are quite anonymous. These anonymous sort of pretty boys that you see in the sort of montage photos on these late 90s, early noughties slasher movies, a lot of them just look the same to me. I couldn't even tell you half their names. I know Travis and Trevor, the twins, but apart from that, couldn't really tell you what their names were. But I like the meta nature of the film as well. You were saying there, Nathan, actually, and I'd written this in my notes, that the killer's get-up was straight out of Graduation Day. And Justin mentioned the mine scene is straight out of My Bloody Valentine. There's a scene where a guy is thrown into, I don't know, it's like a fuse box or something, and he gets electrocuted, which was similar to a scene in Friday the 13th Part 3. And there's a scene where Amy is running down this underground tunnel and there's all this industrial piping and flashing lights, and it's done with a handheld camera, and it's exactly like a scene in Halloween in Alien. And actually the director has actually admitted to that one. He didn't mention anything about Graduation Day or My Bloody Valentine, but he does mention that he did pay homage to Alien in the film with that scene in particular. So yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I love the thesis film switcheroo stuff. I thought that was quite interesting. Again, I'd love to see what this hallowed student film is really like. And it'd be funny if it turned out to be Crazy Fat Ethel Part 2 or something. That would be an interesting twist. But and I like the sort of the two codas the film has. The sniper scene that proves to be just a film set, which kind of bookends the film with two kind of fake out scenes. And then I love the cameo from Rebecca Gayhart over the end credits. It's kind of fun as well, playing a nurse. So I prefer the original. And I thought I didn't like Urban Legend's final cut, but I actually have discovered that with 18 years of hindsight, or 19 years, that I really actually do like it. I think it's kind of underrated. So yeah, hugely entertaining. Thumbs up from me.
Three for three. Three out of four anyway. Before I get to Nathan, one other thing I was going to mention is I love the dialogue in this movie, because a lot of it's so just kind of saying things that, you know, the characters already know just for the audience sake. Like Hart Bochner at the very beginning of the film, he's like, it's time to submit your student films. As you all know, it comes with this. I'm like, they already know this. Why are you telling them this? And then later in the film, when Travis, before he supposedly commits suicide, although he does not, he's talking to that girl before she gets put in the kidney heist. And she's like, you know, I can't believe we've been friends since you've been making films since you were 10 years old. I'm like, he knows this already. Why are you talking like this? I love this. I love dialogue like that. It's just so funny. But Nathan, what did you think?
I really enjoy Urban Legend's final cut. I honestly, I've never been to a film school. I've never been to film school, and I guess that won't come to a shock for anybody that's seen Night Before Easter. But I didn't realize that. I guess this whole idea of them having this much money for these student films was ridiculous until you guys were talking about it. I just didn't realize that. And now I'm like, you know, they make a good point. Like the whole airplane set and everything. I mean, it looks like a professional, like cheesy slasher movie, really. And then it's just a student film. And speaking of which, I do agree with Eric that the character, what is her name? It just left my brain.
Sandra. Blonde.
Yes. Sandra. I love her. I thought she was fantastic. I was so disappointed they killed her off so soon. They should have let her live for at least a while longer, because I think that would have been great. I love the whole idea that she's such a horrible actress, but when they watch her actual death scene, like, they're just, I mean, it's like suddenly she's a good actress.
Don't suspect anything.
Yeah. But it's just a fun movie. I love the scene that Joe mentions where you know, she's hiding and you know, our killer's playing the piano. I thought that was actually a really tense sequence, despite all the cheesiness surrounding it. But the Rebecca Gayheart cameo at the end is fantastic. I love Loretta Devine, just like Eric. I think it's hilarious, the scene where she gets punched and she seems to just get mad about it, even though all their lives are in danger, and just punches him back.
She's like, motherfucker, and punches him right, lands one right back at him. And I love it.
But I will
love
say,
when
though,
they're all her, kind of. I love when they're all there at that set. That's another set in the film, and they have all these prop guns. I mean, there's like 100 of these things, and they all fall to the floor, and they're all scrambling to find the real gun. I love that scene.
That's a great scene.
How coincidental that all the guns that fall out of the prop thing are exactly the same as the actual.
Yeah. And I will say that I preferred Loretta Devine's interaction with the killer from part one, though, because that was just amazingly written dialogue. But no, I mean, Urban Legends, Final Cut, I think it's great. I don't really know what I prefer between it and part one. I think they're both fantastic. I love them both. So thumbs up.
So, well, I mean, you guys got anything else to say on it before we get into background, or?
Well, just to say that I definitely would prefer part one, mainly because Rebecca Gayheart and the you know, her Mrs. Voorhees style transformation at the end is just to die for. So that's why.
Miss Thang.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like, there's two different. It's like, you know, she's all over the top and Hart Bachner's almost just like, whatever, whatever. I just got to do what I got to do, I guess.
Well, he's bored of all those film students.
Yeah.
You can see his point.
Yeah. Background. Anyone have any background? I have quite a bit here, actually.
Okay, I have some.
All right. I'll just Nathan, do you have any background?
No. Well, wait a minute. I do have some background. The nurse at the very end of the movie was in part one.
No.
Just saying.
That was the last great slasher movie she made, too.
Yeah.
I was going to say that's why people listen to the Hysteria Continues for that kind of in depth, for the revelatory deep dives we do.
I'll just rattle through some of this real quick. The screenplay for Urban Legends Final Cut, and this is interesting because I don't know if it was Justin, I think it was Justin that said it, but the screenplay was written by Paul Harris Boardman and Scott Derrickson. This is saying that Altman sought a kind of wacky tone for the film, although I've read, you know, like Justin said, I've read also that he wanted more of a serious Hitchcock tone. So I don't really know, you know, which one's correct. But principal photography took place in Toronto over a period of 47 days. In the fall of 1999, film's opening sequence on the airplane, which was shot over a period of 3 days, was originally written to have occurred on a boat. However, the script was altered last minute after the production crew came across an airplane set from the film Pushing 10, also from 1999. Due to the film's low budget, director Ottman chose to make use of the set and stage the sequence on a plane instead. The university exteriors featured in the film is Trent University in Peterborough, Ontario, which Ottman chose due to its modern and institutional architecture as opposed to something more Gothic. The bell tower, however, was constructed solely for the film for $150,000. The interior sequences, they were filmed in Toronto. The amusement park was Ontario Place, served as the filming location for the mining ride sequence. The mine ride featured in the film was, in fact, a log ride that had been drained of its water for the impending winter months, and then it was redressed to appear as a mine-themed ride. Ottman stated that many of the lighting techniques featured in the film, particularly the use of strobe lighting, were inspired, you know, as Eric said, by Ridley Scott's Alien and Aliens. The sequence featuring Lisa and Trevor, or Travis, at the bar, you know, followed by her death. It was written and shot in Los Angeles after principal photography had finished. The film's producers felt the film needed a death sequence earlier on to, you know, establish a sense of danger. You know, originally the production crew intended to make a fake kidney for the sequence when she awakens to find her kidney had been removed. But due to budget and time constraints, they opted to use a goat's kidney from a butcher shop. And because a goat kidney is anatomically larger than that of a human, it had to be truncated to reduce its size. That's kind of disturbing. John Ottman, he also edited the film and remarked in the audio commentary on the film's 2001 DVD release that many character interaction sequences were truncated or excised entirely to maintain a quicker pace. With the plot centered on a group of film school students, Urban Legends Final Cut uses a self-reflexive narrative approach and features numerous references and allusions to cinema and other horror films. The opening sequence on the airplane was inspired by the Twilight Zone episode Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. Lisa's abduction sequence, in which she is incapacitated with a plastic garment bag, is also a reference to Black Christmas, obviously. Film scholar Jim Harper, in his book Legacy of Blood, A Comprehensive Guide to the Slasher Movies from 2004, cites that Urban Legends Final Cut is a post-screen slasher influenced by Italian giallo films, featuring a distinct Argento influence present in the film, particularly in its killer's attire. Harper also notes direct references in the film to the work of Alfred Hitchcock, as well as Michael Powell's Peeping Tom from 1960, which is paid homage in Sandra's film Murder Scene. Matt Davis, who plays Travis and Trevor.
Matt Davis.
We share the same birthday, although I think I may be a couple years older than he is. Anthony Anderson, he's always been kind of the fat comic relief guy. He was on the fourth season of The Shield, and he was absolutely terrifying. So this guy is always written off as a comic actor, but he's actually a very good dramatic actor if you haven't seen him in anything else. That's pretty much all the background I have, Eric.
I have did you mention the filming dates? It was filmed over the winter of 1999. There's a Fangoria article that is on set in early December 1999, where they're filming that scene where Amy's running through the underground tunnel. So it was filmed over 47 days. It opened on September the 22nd, 2000, and debuted at number one. I'd always assumed that it had been kind of a major flop at the box office, but it did debut at number one behind Exorcist, the version you've never seen, which debuted at number two. So that was a good weekend for me anyway, because I'm a big fan of The Exorcist. Although The Exorcist did only open on a quarter of the screens that were showing Urban Legends Final Cut. So it made $8.5 million on the opening weekend, and a total worldwide gross of $38.5 million worldwide, and a budget of $14 million. So it did all right without doing spectacular, but it wasn't the big failure that I remembered it being reported as. But this is John Ottman's only feature-length directorial outing. He was predominantly known as a film composer and editor, having done the music and editing for things like The Usual Suspects, Apt Pupil. He was composer only on Halloween, H2O, and Lake Placid. He also edited and wrote score for a few of the X-Men movies and last year's Bohemian Rhapsody. He also has a cameo at the end with Rebecca Gayheart. He's a mental patient in that scene that plays over the end credits. Eva Mendes, she had been in Children of the Corn 5, that classic movie, Fields of Terror, before this, and she went on to sort of big budget stuff shortly after this, Too Fast, Too Furious, Hitch, Ghost Rider, stuff like that. We've mentioned Jessica Caulfield, and I think that's probably all. Did I write something else down? I think I did, but now I've lost that bit of paper, so that's the end of that. Justin.
Okay.
Well, before Justin, before you get into that, one more thing I forgot to mention. Nathan would probably appreciate this, but Hart Bochner, Nathan, directed High School High.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I didn't either until I looked it up. I was like, wow, that's kind of cool.
What is High School High?
It's a 90s kind of stupid kind of airplane style comedy with John Lovitz. It's like one of those high school movies like Dangerous Minds or The Principal, but it's like spoof.
It done kind of like Scary Movie style, is it?
Yeah, or like Airplane or something like that.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you. Just a couple of bits and pieces. One was, I thought it was strange. I did wonder if it was actually true, that whole thing about building the clock tower for $150,000. It seemed like a bit of an extravagance, didn't it, to considering they were saying that it was a low-budget movie and they had to make cuts everywhere else. It seemed actually the student films had a higher budget than the actual film There's a couple of bits that I noticed because I watched the on the DVD. There's all the excised scenes, which were, I can't remember what the term for it was, but it were, they weren't, hadn't been fully rendered in so much they didn't have any music, and also the video quality was not bad, but it wasn't as good as the actual finished film. But there was about 8 excised scenes, and they were all, none of them were like horror based really. They were more kind of character driven and little quirky things. So as the film already had like a lot of that anyway, I think John Ottman decided to cut those out to get the film moving. Say I interviewed him before the film came out, and just to quote him directly, and this is what I find it's a bit of a mystery about the film, about its tone. But when I asked him, said, "Were you keen to avoid the slasher tag for your film?" And he said, direct quote, "Yes, I wanted to avoid the film being placed in the slasher category. I wanted the movie to be a little more sophisticated in terms of feeling real to the audience rather than being a farce and making fun of the genre. The world of Urban Legend 2 is to be believed and therefore more scary, I hope. The more you believe in the characters of a film, the more invested you'll be in the story and affected by its outcome. So the attempt was to make a tense thriller that's enjoyable via the situations and the colourful characters. I think young audience may be looking at something a little smarter, which I hope they think is more hip." So it's curious, isn't it, considering that the film... I do wonder whether they started making the movie and then they realised, actually, this is too ridiculous. It's not going to be taken seriously, so let's camp it up a bit while they were making it, because...
That's what it feels like to me.
It does, because then he sort of said, and I saw that thing quote as well, where he said he wanted to make a almost like a parody, and it doesn't... The two things don't jive, do they? They're not... It seems very strange.
Yeah, because there's scenes in this film like they are very Hitchcocky, and like the scene where she first realizes that Simon is being attacked and they do this camera swoop up to her face where she's listening to the audio, it kind of reminds me of something like John Travolta in Blowout, or Brian De Palma, very Brian De Palma. And the scene where Simon gets killed by the lens and the lens rolls toward our point of view and you see Simon's reflection in the lens, that stuff is really well done. But then it skips to scenes where basically kids are getting, abducted and having their kidneys removed, and they're being chased by a goofy looking killer. So the tone really is kind of, all over the place.
Yeah, I just kind of wondered if it was that it had been tinkered with, or the producers or whoever saw it and thought actually they wanted to go one way and there was a difference of opinion, which kind of resulted in a kind of slightly schizophrenic movie. But a couple of little tidbits I saw was the trailer on the DVD. Watch the trailer, and I don't know if you caught it, but Jessica, there's a scene in the film where they play a joke on Jennifer Morrison, where that like a massive one of those massive lights in studio falls down and they think it's killed the Sandra character, Jessica Caulfield, and in fact that she's managed to rig herself up with like some gory special effects on her head, which she pulls off to show it's latex. But in the trailer, they've coloured the gore on her face to black, so not red. So it's to make it less gory, I kind of guess, to make it so for the trailer. So maybe there was a thing about to try and get it seen as at a lower rating, perhaps. Say the film, it was, you could probably imagine, it was it wasn't particularly well received. I think even what we kind of know, the slasher movies of the 80s were hated by critics, and I think critics were annoyed. They liked Scream, but they seemed to think, well, they couldn't understand why the teen slasher movie was making a comeback when they thought actually Scream, they thought, was more of a stake through its heart than they something to revive it. But typically, they really hated it. I mean, Roger Ebert awarded it 2 stars out of 4, which I kind of guess is not too bad. But he says, he in his review, he sort of declared that the movie makes the fatal mistake of believing there's still life in the wheezy serial killer on campus formula. Although he did concede that production credits were slick and the performances quite adequate, given the narrow opportunities of the genre. So again, Roger Ebert being typically sniffy and snobby about the genre. So the film itself didn't get it didn't really get much in the way of good reviews. So as like Eric said, I can remember the film coming out here and sort of disappearing very quickly, and in the same way that Valentine did the year after. Have we covered Valentine? I'm not sure if we have. Did we do it as a main pick?
I think we did.
Oh, well, there you go. It's been 10 years. But anyway, I remember that being at the cinema and us being the only people in there. And I can't remember if I saw Urban Legends Final Cut at the cinema. I imagine I probably did. I think that's pretty much all I've got. Apart from, say, if you did want to read that that interview with John Ottman on Hysteria Lives, it's still up there in the interview section. So, have a read of that. So, that's all the background. Anything left to say on Urban Legend?
Scott Derrickson, who co-wrote it, the same year as this came out, he directed Hellraiser Inferno, which was the first of those straight-to-video Hellraiser movies that were generally quite bad. But he went on to a big career. He directed Exorcism of Emily Rose, The Day the Earth Stood Still remake, Sinister, he did, Deliver Us from Evil, Doctor Strange, he did for Marvel, and he's done lots of big things since, starting on Humble Beginnings as co-writing Urban Legends Final Cut.
So a bit like you, Eric, done lots of big things.
Yes.
Eric, speaking of big things, do you have a joke of the week?
I do.
It's my joke of the week. I'm so sober and fantastic.
Why should a homosexual never date the killer from the first Urban Legend movie? Because she will always break a gay heart.
That was about as good as your Patreon joke. I liked it.
Yeah. I mean, I liked your Patreon joke after I got it.
And
I liked this one, so, yeah.
But you did this one, you didn't need explaining. Nathan, did you?
Yeah, you didn't have to tell me, because I knew it would have something to do with gay heart, but you took it a step further with rebreak gay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that was a good one.
That's me taking jokes to the next level.
I love how we're dissecting the way he told this joke.
Yes.
Did you listen back to the Urban Legends episode? Were you doing jokes of the week back then?
I don't know. When did we do
it? Yeah, because I want to know.
It wasn't that long ago.
Don't tell me it was the same joke.
I don't think so, but I wonder what it was.
No.
It could possibly have been, because it's kind of an obvious one. But hey ho.
Well, you've done. Yeah. Well, thank you, Eric. It's taking it to the next level. Unfortunately, it's a level down, but it's still.
Oh, you're just very mean to me all the time.
Oh, Eric. You should see, if only our dear audience could see what happens on the private threads between the four of us.
Yeah, I'm treated like Meg from Family Guy.
Maybe that could be like a Patreon like thing, where like if you donate this much, you get you get exclusive access to our conversations, which are really just kind of technical jargon and occasional gifs of Toya.
Yes, I know. What I can imagine the dollars rolling in now.
Yeah.
So, talking of which, with Patreon this month coming up, I think it will be around about this time, or sort of, we're doing we've just done and recorded a Patreon episode for The Deadly Spawn, which was Nathan's choice. So, if you want to listen to that exclusively on the Hysteria Continues Patreon, which you can join for support the show with just as little as a dollar, and also you get to hear episodes, up to 2 weeks, but usually around about a week early. And also, Eric does do a joke of the week, which you heard, which you won't know what that's about.
Yeah.
Unless you sign up for Patreon. So, do we have, what kind of feedback do we have on this, Joseph? Do you want to?
From Facebook, Tim S. Turner says, a huge dud, almost completely gore-free after the high of the first one with that barnstorming performance by Rebecca Gayhart. I'll never understand the recent retro love for it. Ara Alishan says, I might be in the minority here, but I actually find this sequel to be a cut above the original, and anyone who says otherwise probably listens to Susie and the Banshees. Stephen Petak says, I bought a ticket to see it during its theatrical run, and I walked out after 30 minutes. I wasn't having a great day, and it wasn't doing much to lift my spirits. I love Urban Legend and wasn't at all impressed with this attempt at a follow-up. Years later, I sat down to watch the whole thing. It was nice to see Rebecca Gayhart show up at the end. Aside from that, I think it's cool that Hart Bochner of Terror Train and Die Hard fame was cast. That's about all I can say about it. It's not one of my favorites. I wish Rebecca G had a bigger role. That would have helped. Amanda Reyes says, surprisingly good. I rented it on a whim after I read a really horrid review of the film. Curiosity got the best of me, and I couldn't believe how much I enjoyed it. I remember a little now, but you know, Hart Bochner, meow, and it's fun. Shane J. Murray says, I've always preferred it to the original. I like the cast and the mystery better. Shane Lambert says, has its moments, not as entertaining as the first one, though. Love Rebecca Gayhart's little cameo at the end. Nice touch. Jenny Hall Cameron says, I wanted to like it more than I did. It had Hart Bochner from Terror Train, and that's my favorite slasher, and I just like him anyway. But I didn't like this movie. It just really annoyed me. The first one was way better movie. Haven't seen this or the Bloody Mary one since they came out and wonder if I would change my mind, but I just remember being that annoyed with it. Nick Swanson says, I rented it years ago and literally couldn't tell you a thing about it. The original movie is way overrated, and I don't mind missing out on the Scream Factory Blu-ray for it, even with a nice new slipcover artwork it came with. Greg Wojcik says, had high hopes but was very let down. Worth a watch, but not a great movie by any means. Paul Downey says, very fun sequel. Michael Ferrari says, one night my wife and I decided to stay up late and watch Urban Legends Final Cut. This would normally be fine and not an issue, but our kids were pretty young at the time and loved to wake up really early in the wee hours of the morning. So we bit the bullet and watched. It's a pretty silly movie from the get-go. I wish all film schools used half of an airplane sets to shoot student films. I also wish film schools seemed to focus on Slasher 101 instead of the usual stuff like Battleship, Potemkin, and Citizen Kane. The rest is a series of nonsensical murders, the real highlight being the set piece in the bathtub with the missing kidney and Jacinda Barrett. That scene is so well done and executed that everything else in the film fails to live up to it. I really like parts of it, and that Hart Bochner plays the film teacher is great, but I still think the first movie is more satisfying. We kind of regretted watching it so late, but for a sequel, it's pretty decent. Especially if you don't take it all that seriously. Don't Look Behind You says, other than the opening scene, it's a pretty weak follow-up. Gary Yoon says, really can't remember much about this one. I recall finding it a bit of a letdown after the original. Maybe it's in need of a revisit. Jeff Brown says, a huge letdown after the original, although I've grown to enjoy it more now than I did in 2000. J.W. Durbin says, it's much better now than it was then because the Scream era revival had market dilution that softened the impact of these horrors. Throw in a bunch of TV actors and it comes across paint by numbers. Still some fun to be had, though. Adam Simpson says, dreadful film. Definitely the worst of the series, and that's saying something considering Bloody Mary is also in there. Wow! Diametrically in disagreement there, Adam Simpson. Chris Moore says, I enjoy it. Nowhere near as good as the first one, but it has some good moments. And I like that it tries to go for a more classical suspense route, even if it doesn't always play out as intended. The twin brother twist is hysterical, though. Robert Long says, I like it tons better than the first movie. Christian Comer says, I have to admit, I still like Final Cut more than the first film. Just always found it more fun throughout. Hart Bochner was great when revealed as the killer. I love his fate at the end. He and Brenda were made for each other. I also die laughing at Jessica Caulfield's blooper reel. If there's a complaint I have, I would have liked to have seen more use of the ghost mask the killer wore before the big chase scene between him and the final girl began. Let's see. Donnie Ibarra says, it was just okay when I first saw it in the theaters. Vaughn Colmier says, it sucked straight up. Tyler Elkin sighs. Mike Sanders says, it's nowhere near as good as the original, but it's a lot of fun. On the forums, how can that be? Sis saw this in the theater with my wife and my best friend. I loved it. Just the right blend of cheese and slasher goodness. Mr. Palmer says, I really like it. Hart Bochner makes for a decent killer. I always like his reveal. He's so meh, I kill people, that it adds an extra creepy charm to his character. Kodiak Jack says, I like it as much, if not more, than the original. All hail Hart Bochner. Dude can do no wrong, especially when he's an envious killer. And he's a selfish relative, wouldn't you guys agree? He is very, very selfish. On Instagram, Shameful Clutter 2 says, nine hearts. I'm sorry. JB Horror says, underrated sequel, a fun slasher with a good cast. I like the killer's outfit, bringing back memories of graduation day. Mike BP, and this is the last of the feedback, says, I love this movie, especially the bathtub scene. You guys are on a roll at the moment. Keep it up.
And that's all the feedback we have.
Excellent. Well, thank you for everyone who has written in. You'll be finding out what we're covering next time shortly.
Aren't TV movies fun?
You see all these familiar faces, but doing really unfamiliar things. And I think that that's really exciting. And I think that's something important to the history of film in general.
Join Amanda.
There's a lot going on in that scene that is unspoken between two men. So I'm just telling you, I think there was a little Brokeback Mountain.
Dan.
I think Therese is a little bipolar. Her voice, it goes from this sort of sexy, sensuous voice to, okay, Ramsay, get out of here.
And Nate.
I love, you know, in like the late 70s, early 80s, the crazier a person got, the bigger their hair got.
As they discuss their favorite made-for-TV movies.
Mr. Hazelrig.
On the Made-for-TV Mayhem Show.
This man came to see him. He never comes to see him at work. What kind of stories could he have to tell him? Tales of his postal delivery.
All I know is today's October the 31st. 31 backwards is 13. It's Friday. It's Halloween. It's the 13th anniversary of the lawnmower killings. It's a crazy loose. It's prom night.
Hi, this is Tracy Savage, Debbie from Friday the 13th, Part 3. For the best podcast ever on old slasher movies, be sure you find Hysteria Continues. You will be glad you did. And hey, stay out of Crystal Lake, okay?
Every episode, we celebrate a classic slasher movie such as Friday the 13th, Halloween, My Bloody Valentine, Happy Birthday to Me, and Crazy Fat Ethel 2. The Hysteria Continues, bringing slash with panache since 2011. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and all good podcatchers. But is there anything else we need to discuss?
I guess what Nathan is picking next time.
Yes. So Nathan, It is a Nathan choice. So yes. Nathan, what is it?
What delights? The House on Tombstone Hill, a.k.a. Dead Dudes in the House.
Well, I think it's absolutely vile, and I wish you'd leave.
How dare you?
Yes, well, it's a Nathan pick. I'm going to be watching that this afternoon in time for the show, so I haven't seen it yet. We'll see if we enjoyed it as much as the Deadly Prawn that you made us watch earlier.
Oh, yes. I would love a movie about Deadly Prawn now that I know what they are.
Okay, well, thank you for listening to The Hysteria Continues. I hope you enjoyed our sort of million-dollar recreation of... because we're sitting now in a full-size Titanic replica recording this, because obviously that's the budget we have for this podcast. Yes. Like the film students in Urban Legend. Sorry?
£150,000 microphones.
Yes. Or $1.50 microphones, as they actually are. But yes, we'll be back. Will we be dead dudes in the house, or will we enjoy a trip to Tombstone Hill? We'll find out next time on The Hysteria Continues. So what are we playing out with, Joseph?
Well, I think we're going to play out with that wonderful theme from Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. So say goodbye to the good people.
Bye.